Today's very exciting because we have a power team of guests, all of them faculty members in the computer science department, here to talk about a range of computer science courses and also the material that you will cover in such courses as those. Think of these as teasers, perhaps, a pre-shopping period. But it's an exciting time, to be honest, to be getting involved in CS itself. The introduction of minors by the college recently has certainly generated interest in pursuing additional courses. And so even if you're not considering becoming a CS major, which most of you will not after this course, but rather are considering minoring it, or at least dabbling some more, know that there's plenty of courses after this one that you are now qualified for, including CS 51, 61, and 171, all of which we'll talk about a little bit today. And know, too, that it's an exciting time, too, because this department, CS in particular, has really grown. I mean, even since I graduated in 99, there are probably twice as many faculty members in the CS department. And in fact, two of the courses you're going to hear a little something about today didn't even exist back then. Up next is Professor Matt Welsh, who teaches a new course which debuted last year for the first time called CS 61, Systems Programming Class. And it's Matt's course that has that wonderfully exciting first problem set that I mentioned on Monday, that of the binary bomb. So I hope you enjoy this next teaser.
Okay, I had to shut down my email so you couldn't see all the people posting on my Facebook profile today. All right, great. So it's actually really exciting to be teaching here in Saunders Theater. I've never had a chance. I've been here once before. You would think they would give all new Harvard faculty a free lecture in this room just to make you feel like a real Harvard professor. So I got it now. What I want to do is just talk to you very briefly about CS61, which is a new class. We started this class last year, and the idea behind CS61 is to provide an introduction to computer systems and what's called machine organization, which is really one way of saying, you know, how do computers really work down on the inside? And this will be offered in fall 2009, generally Tuesdays and Thursdays, 2:30 to 4. I doubt the time will change. Prerequisites is this class, of course, or for your friends who may not have taken CS50, and I can't imagine why they didn't. If you have C programming experience of some kind, you can skip over 50 and take 61 directly. CS61 can be used to satisfy the breadth requirement in the CS concentration, and you can also use it for the CS minor requirement. And my recommendation to most people is that you consider taking CS61 and 51, in particular if you're going to be a CS concentrator, but you know, more generally speaking, that they both reflect kind of two sides of the same coin, that CS61 is about systems programming, CS51 is about higher levels of computer science, and so they go together very nicely. All right, so what is the class all about? What I want to do in this class is try to reveal how computers really work. So this is about getting under the hood, understanding how processors work, what registers are, how memory works, how compilers work to a certain extent, since they generate all the code that your computers actually run, and being able to understand what affects the performance of programs running on your computer. So the architecture of the processor, that is, how the processor is designed internally, how it accesses memory, what instructions does it provide, how do those instructions interact with each other. Caching and memory management. Caches are very important to getting good performance, and most computers these days have many, many megabytes of cache built in on the processor chip itself. If it weren't for that cache memory, most computers would run hundreds or thousands of times slower than they actually do. It turns out that caching is so important, and therefore so is writing code that takes makes good use of the cache. And also talking about operating system ideas that affect the performance of programs that you run. So processes and threads and dynamic memory management, virtual memory, those kinds of things are very important to understand. So this is a very practical course in a lot of ways. It's about writing very solid systems code, writing very fast systems code, and really understanding what's going on down inside so that you know, you can dig down to the deep mysteries of what's going on inside the computer. The reason that we decided to introduce this course was largely because we perceived there was a tremendous gap between, I think, the concepts that are presented in a lot of computer science courses and the reality of what's actually going on at the level of the circuits in the computer itself. Now, this gap becomes more profound, I think, when you start programming in higher level languages. In this class, you've largely focused on programming in C. C is a very low-level language. Some people call C basically syntactic sugar on top of assembly. Yeah? But if you start programming in Java, or like I do most of the time, you program in Python, if you only programmed in a language like Python, you would have a very difficult time understanding what affected the performance and the correctness of those programs. And that's because the language hides a lot from you. Now, that's a good thing, as Greg was saying, that having the right language allows you to express things. I can do something in one line of Python that would take me probably 20 or 40 lines to do in C, because I can have a list comprehension. It's beautiful, it's clean, it's slick. Yes? And I'm lazy. I'm a lazy programmer, so I like programming in Python. But if you want to get good performance, you've got to understand what's happening down on inside the machine. It's also really important to understand how computers work in order for you to understand what happens when you study operating systems, databases, processor architecture, compilers, networks, and so forth. And these are, of course, things that are in the advanced core sequence for the computer science concentration. So if you're planning to be a CS concentrator, understanding some basic things about the guts of a computer help you a lot in going forward. And so even if you're not planning on being a CS major, CS61 is the kind of class that will really help you become a better programmer. Not just better programmer in the stylistic sense and the algorithmic sense, but better programmer in terms of dealing with complexity, getting very good performance, understanding some of the weirdest bugs you will ever see. I promise by the time you are done taking CS61, you will really understand pointers. Yeah, you will really understand pointers. Whoops, okay. Raman already made the joke about the blue screen of death, and this is a Mac, so you should know better than that. How many times have you seen this? Yeah, many of us have seen this a lot. I haven't seen it in about 15 years because I've never used Windows. But if you look at this, most of us would say, what the hell is that? Yeah? Well, what's going on here? Well, we've got a trace of the stuff that's loaded into memory in the Windows NT kernel when it crashed. And if you understood some of the stuff here, you could go and diagnose what was going on. Now, the fault is probably not your fault. It's probably the person who wrote some, you know, buggy device driver for your sound card or something that caused the crash. But, you know, there are people who know how to read this thing and can understand it. With CS61 under your belt, you have a fighting chance at getting some headway on that problem. How many times have you run a program that segfaulted? Lots? Yeah? It says this funny thing, segmentation fault, core dumped. What on earth is that? Yeah? Well, segmentation fault. Well, that means something. That says the processor has raised an exception that was as a result of accessing a bad memory location. That's what a segmentation fault is. Core dumped. That means it left a file in the directory that the program was running called a core file that contained the memory image of the program at the time that it crashed. Yeah? Most of the time when you run a program in a segmentation fault, no core file is left there. That's because the defaults on most shells are to turn off the core file, because to most regular human beings, a core file is useless, so you would delete it anyway, just waste disk space. If you're me, however, you need the core file so you can figure out what happened. Yeah. So if you look at the core file tells you exactly what the program was doing at the time that it crashed. And if you understood how to look at the core file and walk through it, you would be able to debug the source of the crash, and you'd be able to fix your program instead of just, you know, adding more printfs until it works. Yeah? So let's say that I was able to load this core file in. How would you do it? Well, GDB, the GNU debugger, is able to read in core files. So you give GDB the executable, the program that you're running, and you give it the core file, which says, here's the snapshot of its post-mortem, so to speak. Yeah? And what I can do is use this command that says, well, where was the program when it crashed? And it says, oh, well, it was running in this function called main, and it was running at this memory address right here, 1FEA. And I can say, well, let me look at the code for that function, but let me not just look at the C source code. I've got the C source code. Yeah, I wrote it myself. I can go look at it. I want to look at the assembly. I want to look at the machine instructions that were running at the time. Why? Because I need to understand what went wrong. I've been staring at the C code for 3 hours trying to fix this bug. Maybe I need to dig below that level and look at the machine code that the compiler generated and understand what's happening at the machine level instead. So I use this disassemble command, and that just prints out all of the machine instructions that were running inside that program. And you can go and look at the one where it was crashing, and it says, well, it was trying to move the value 42 into the memory location pointed to by the EAX register. What I just said makes no sense to most of you. It would after the second lecture of CS61. Yeah? This is what the processor is doing down inside, and it's the result of some line of code that you wrote in C that got compiled down to assembly. You should be able to read this and understand what's going on. It's actually not that complicated. Assembly language sounds scary. Sounds like something that only hackers need to understand. Sounds like something that, you know, why would I ever want to look at assembly language? That's like really low level, right? The way I look at assembly language, it's not that you actually need to write any assembly code, but you should be able to read it, at least at a basic level. It's like Latin. Yes? Unless you're planning on working in the Vatican, speaking Latin is not that useful of a skill to have. Okay? But reading it is really useful for studying all kinds of texts and understanding linguistics and all kinds of other things. Much the same way with assembly language. If you could read this, you would be able to debug your code better, you'd be able to understand performance anomalies, you'd be able to understand memory bugs, and it would help you be a better programmer. Okay, so here's a very practical example of this. Let's say that I left a program in my home directory that, when you ran it, asked for a password. And if you got the right password, it would start a shell running as me, so you could become me and then go and delete my files or change your grade in my classes or whatever. Okay? Yes? So if you type in the right password, it starts up a shell as MDW. That's my username. Well, if you get the wrong password, it's got a trapdoor built in, so it actually emails President Faust and automatically adboards you. Yes? So don't try to guess the wrong password. So you want to guess only the right password. You don't want to guess the wrong one. How would you do it? Well, you're not going to get it right on the first try. Yeah, so do you just not try at all? No, you're determined. Well, let's see here. What is this MDW shell? That's an executable file that was produced by a C compiler. If I could look at the machine instructions inside of that, without even having the source code, if I could read the assembly code inside of that, I could figure out what it's doing and figure out what password it's asking for. Well, if I just try to cat the executable file, you're going to get a bunch of garbage on the screen. It'll probably close your terminal and beep a lot of times at you. So that's not going to work. All these things that look like Icelandic are really machine instructions rendered as ASCII. Okay? Well, if I try to look at it in hexadecimal format, OD-X will print out a file and show you the hex. Well, that's not that useful either. Well, how about using the disassembler? Objdump is a disassembler. You can take any executable file. You can take anything. You can take Microsoft Word or PowerPoint or World of Warcraft or whatever. Take the executable, disassemble it, reverse engineer its inner workings. You can figure out what makes the paperclip dance. Yes? Well, let's look inside. What we see here is a bunch of machine instructions, and the disassembler is being very nice. It's printing out the hex, but it's also printing out a sort of a human-readable mnemonic for each instruction. And each one of these lines is one instruction that the processor would execute as part of running this program. Well, if you've never seen x86 assembly language before, of course this isn't, you know, that easy to read, but it turns out that it's incredibly simple to learn. There's only a handful of instructions that you need to know. Learning x86 assembly is not so much like learning a new programming language. It's much simpler than that. So we could figure out what's going on here, and you'll learn that if you take the class. It's pretty easy. So let's just take a segment of the code here. Well, I could tell you what it does. You know, the first line is putting something called the EBP register on the stack, and the second line is copying the stack. You know, we could go through the details of what it's doing. Well, it turns out that in this program, one of the things it's doing is it's comparing the thing you typed to this thing that's sitting in this other memory location. Sounds like a way of checking the password, right? So I noticed that it's actually looking at this memory location to make a decision about whether the password was correct. Well, let me go and look at that memory location and see what's there. Well, if I look at that section of the memory, I see this, which is another memory address. And you'd know that that was a memory address because the x86 processor is a little Indian, and so you'd have to swap the bytes in order to get a human-readable form. Again, I'll teach you all this stuff, but, you know, this is how hackers do things. This is how they figured out how the iPhone was jailbroken. Yeah? This is how a bunch of interesting bugs have been exploited for nefarious purposes, is by people looking at the innards of an executable and figuring out what it's doing and what it might be doing wrong. Well, in this case, if we look at this memory location in the executable and we dump that out, we see this string here. But if we translate that into ASCII, I'm sorry, the text is kind of dark. It tells you what the password is, and the password is, well, it's take CS61. So that's my little subtle message to all of you. Okay. So this was just a very simple example. Now, that was a really simple example, and, you know, I'll walk you through exactly how to do all those things in the class. The first assignment in CS61 is so much fun. What we do is we give you an executable, and it asks you for a series of 7 passwords. You got to get all 7 passwords right. If you get one of the passwords wrong, it sends an email to your TF and you lose a quarter point off the assignment. Now, just a quarter point, so you'd have to get it wrong a lot in order to actually damage your grade, but it's going to prevent you from brute forcing it. Yeah? 7 passwords. Now, the first password is something very simple like this, where it's a string, and you can go look in the executable and figure out what the string is. The rest of the passwords are not so simple. They're things like the result of an arithmetic computation that's being done by the executable. You've got to compare what you type in to what the executable's doing. So this is a great way of learning x86 assembly. It's a lot of fun. People get addicted to this assignment. I got addicted to this assignment because I try to do it every year myself just to make sure my x86 assembly is still sharp. And you kind of get sucked into figuring out what the next password is. It's a lot of fun. Okay. I want to tell you very quickly about my favorite hack of all time, which is something that I discuss in this class a little bit. Ken Thompson, he was one of the co-inventors of Unix. I hope you know what Unix is, yes? Probably the most famous operating system of all time. He won the Turing Award in 1983, which is computer science's highest honor. This is like the Nobel Prize for computer science. And as part of winning the award, you go and give a big lecture in a room that probably looks like this one to people wearing tuxedos and stuff. Yes? During the lecture, he made, and this is, you know, 20-something years after Unix was first developed, he made this stunning revelation, and he said that he added a back door into the early versions of Unix that would allow him to log in to any Unix computer. This is before the internet, really, so it wasn't like that meant he could go log into Unix machines all over the place. And by the way, the back door's been removed, so you don't have to worry that he can break into your Linux box or something. But he wanted to make sure that if there was a problem with a Unix computer anywhere, he developed Unix, he wanted to be able to get into it. So he added a back door into the login program that would accept a magic password. Well, the problem was that everybody had the source code for all the programs. So anybody looking at login.c would just notice, hey, there's this funny hack here that if you type Ken with the magic password, it'll let you in. Yeah? So anybody would have seen this. It was like open source before they called it open source. It's before there was such thing as closed source. Yeah? So anybody could find the backdoor code. So he said, well, how do I hide the backdoor code? I got it. I also wrote the C compiler. Are you with me? Yes? So he hacked the C compiler to recognize when it was compiling this file called login.c to add the backdoor code into the executable. And then he deleted the original login.c file. So there is no trace anywhere of his backdoor. Well, now we have a problem. What's the problem? The source code for the C compiler sitting around too. All right, so if somebody happened to be looking inside of there, they see this very suspicious looking code that was hacking login to add the back door. So what did he do? He hacked the C compiler so it recognized when it was compiling itself to add the backdoor code into itself to add the backdoor code into login.c. And then he deleted the original C compiler source code. Does this make sense? It's viral, yes? Every time the compiler compiles itself, it inserts the backdoor, so the next generation of the compiler always has the backdoor hidden inside of it. This must be the coolest thing that has ever been done. I think this is so cool. So the only way you would know that this backdoor existed at all would you'd have to look inside of the binary code for either login or the C compiler. You'd have to disassemble it and look at the assembly, and you'd look at the assembly and you'd say, wait a minute, there seems to be some assembly code here that doesn't correspond to any C code that I've ever seen. Yeah? So it's one of the coolest hacks ever, and he got away with it for some time. I don't know how many systems had his little funky backdoor on it, but it was early days of Unix, so it wasn't like he was breaking any laws. Okay, so, just to wrap up. So why do you want to take CS61? CS61 is going to help you understand how computers work. It's going to help you debug the hardest and most interesting bugs you will ever see. As I said, you'll be able to hack binaries for fun and profit. You know, the code vet, I do a whole lecture where I talk about the code red virus and how it kind of took over the whole internet because it was exploiting Stack Overflow bugs in Microsoft's web server. How to measure the performance of your programs, how to optimize them, and how to write concurrent multi-threaded programs like a pro. So after CS61, you're going to get kind of a lot of exposure to these system things. So sounds pretty hard. I want to emphasize CS61 is really intended to be an intro level course. It's meant to be the same difficulty level as, say, CS51. It's not intended to be a really advanced course. It is intended for non-CS concentrators as well as CS concentrators. So we try to emphasize a lot that only about half the people who take 61 this year, I think, are CS concentrators. I had people taking CS61 last year who were classics majors. Yeah, so they took my whole advice on Latin seriously. There's 5 lab assignments. The first one, you hack a binary. The second one, we give you a binary that's got bugs in it, and you have to exploit the bugs in order to cause the binary to do things it was not designed to do. Yeah? The third one, you implement malloc. There's where you learn about pointers for real. Okay? You're going to write your own Unix shell, and then the final lab is a lot of fun. You write your own concurrent multi-threaded server. You get to work in pairs on the labs, so you have help. And the midterm and the final are both take-home exams, so you know they're a little bit less stressful than some other exams. Okay, so what we'll talk about in the class, x86 assembly language, performance measurement, linking, loading, memory, Unix systems programming, files, pipes, signals, processes, thread synchronization, Unix sockets, and implementing concurrent servers. That's the syllabus. You can go look. All the lecture notes and everything from this year are online. You can go to the CS61 webpage, look through them. You can look at the labs. You know, the same labs next year, so you can kind of get a sense of what the workload's like. Okay. This is the last thing I want to say. So how many know this reference here? Yes? I like to think of this a lot. This is The Matrix, by the way, was written by people who are totally computer geeks. Had to be. There's a lot of parallels between what happens in the Matrix and what happens in computer systems, because when you're above a certain level, everything kind of seems imaginary. But when you get down to the guts of what's happening inside the computer, you really learn what happens. So take CS61. That's the red pill. You can also take the blue pill or the green pill or whatever. Take CS51. Take them both. I'm not saying it's one, either or. But definitely by taking CS61, I will show you how deep the rabbit hole goes. All right. If you have questions, just email me or come by my office sometime. Thank you.